Hey everybody, what's up? Thank you so much for clicking on part two of the Legends of Eld interview with A.D. Greer, the author himself of this amazing novel. Please check out part one if you haven't already. And also remember to go to barnesandnoble.com as well as amazon.com to get your copies of the book, whether it's digital or hard copy or paperback. Definitely pick up this book. It is an amazing read. You're going to love this episode. And also, thank you so much for checking out Facts Not Included. And remember to give us a like and a subscribe. Enjoy the episode. Back into the story of the Legends of Eld, the Dragon of Elfwood, the first of many books, possibly. And we're going to ask that question to him later. But before we get into that, can we discuss? As I was reading this, I got the idea. I don't know if Antonio felt the same way, but I had the idea that, again, being an avid Star Wars lover, I don't think you did this at all. I just had the idea that I was seeing C-3PO, R2-D2 kind of dealing with each other. Not that R2-D2 is a bad guy, but he's more of the dick, right? And C-3PO is the smarter one, right?
Yeah.
So, and I had that...
Top and bottom.
Yeah, I had that feeling slightly, not the whole way through, with Hakari and Pal, because they're definitely two opposites. They're like, no one's more opposite than those two. And yet they got to work together.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, how is this going to work out? And I think they work out so well together because they butt heads all the time. And one knows that the other one's being sneaky, and the other one knows that he knows, and all this is going on. And you manage to write it in a way where it all makes sense. So can you explain, first off, who Hakari is, and then also can you explain who Pal is for those that have yet to read the book?
Okay, so in the story, Hakari Musha is this paladin, which is a holy knight. His god is Rey, the sun god.
Right.
Channels his energy. He's able to heal. He's able to use his magic sword, the sun sword, to cast light. It can become so hot, like the sun, it can cut
melts
through
anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's Cole's moral compass. And then Pal is the name of this mysterious locksmith. And he's the immoral compass. You don't even really know what his real name is.
Right, yeah.
So everyone just calls him Pal.
Scoundrel. So.
Yeah, exactly. He's
Which
a
at
rogue.
First, when reading it, I was just kind of like, this is going to be tough to understand that his name is not Pal. But and then you believe it is Pal for the rest of the story.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of get over it in the beginning.
Yeah, you do.
When I first started writing, it was kind of just a gimmick, you know, like,
right.
Oh, there's this.
He's their Pal.
Yeah, he's their, this is my buddy, Pal. And, you know, someone who's like a cloaked figure, usually in like these stories when you meet Strider, it's like, oh, who's this guy? Who's he going to be? And like, I just wanted it to be this character. It's like, oh, who's this mysterious guy? Oh, his name is Pal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this very innocent sounding name.
It's like, I hate people named Guy. Like, like, come on. I know he didn't do it himself, but come on.
Yeah. So, well, you'll eventually learn his real name, but that's for another tale.
So you can't trust them. Like, it's, you just automatically can't. Yeah.
So, some background is Pal is part of an organization called the Locksmiths. Mm-hmm. In this world, they act as locksmiths,
mm-hmm.
but it's also secretly a thief organization.
Right. They break locks.
Yeah, so yeah. That's part
genius,
of their job.
Man,
it's really hard to figure
so
out.
He's so smart. It's so smart.
So you also, as you read the story and they go to different places, you see how big this organization is, and he's one of the founders, and he doesn't even know how large the organization is. He's discovering it on his own. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have this paladin, this holy knight who does everything
mm-hmm.
that you should, and he's the kind of guy that will save someone for free. And Pal, this locksmith, is always about what's in it for him. You know, money, women, all those different things.
Physical.
Yeah, so, the materialistic. Well, yeah.
He's a horn dog.
Yeah, yes, he is. So you get to see how that like trips him up. You get to see how Hikari gets tripped up by his own moral superiority. And Cole, who's kind of this sponge character that's like soaking up the best of all of them. We haven't even talked about the wizard Macario at all.
Oh no! Another favorite.
Yeah, all the characters that come into play end up, you know, they rub off on Cole and really make him more of who he is. They expand him, and I think, as you were saying, Hikari and Pal are just on the opposite ends of the spectrum, and that's kind of where a hero needs to lie. Yeah. Sometimes they got to do the wrong thing to get the ultimate, you know, right.
No, I didn't mean to. I wasn't cutting you off.
Okay,
I'm
sorry. So I just thought another question was coming. But
No. I was like, I don't know what I was doing. Like, I was kind of like getting air and then cough. I don't know.
So okay, we'll cut that out. Yeah.
So you have these two characters that I wanted people to like them, and I wanted to see who would like who, and you know, I would have my own opinions on you based on which character you relate to more, and like, oh, okay, so you're a Pal fan, you're a Hikari fan, you're a Cole fan, you know. Like, one of the worries I've had for so long is like, are people gonna love Cole as much as I do? Because there are all these other characters that I'm putting on his journey that are way more powerful, better suited for the role. But I think that's the journey he has to learn, is like where his place is, and you know, his superpower is enthusiasm and being a good friend and keeping all these characters that, you know, have their own opinions on how things should be done, keeping them on track, because even, you know, as soon as there's nothing in it for Pal, he would leave.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And he's shown that a couple of times.
And with Hikari, it's like as soon as he saves someone, he can wash his hands and move on to the next thing, which he has his own hidden quest.
Who would you personally, like, who would you say, like, you would probably relate more to? Would it be Hikari or Pal, or maybe a mix of both? I'm not saying you're, you know,
out of those two,
Pal or Hikari, but
out of those two, more Pal. I think that I have the strongest connection to Macario, who's the wizard.
Right.
He reads all the time. It's on the website in his bio that he knows so much more magic than he uses. He's someone.
So maybe he's the C-3PO.
Yeah, yeah. He knows all the language. And Maisie are more of the C-3PO, R2-D2, the Merry,
right,
and the
Pippin. They're not so much of the front.
Yeah.
They're kind of...
They're on the side. They're a lot of the...
Wow, I'm retarded.
I think that, you know, there's so many characters.
No,
there's
right.
a lot to take in, and that this book was just setting up. You know, for me, it's like, if the events in this book didn't happen, everything that happens later in the world would have just gone to shit.
Nah.
Like this needed to happen, and you know, because this character is gone, then a new character has to come in and take place, or this character can't save the world from this one. And even if he was bad for certain reasons, he was ultimately trying to do a good thing. So there's a duality theme throughout.
Right.
Even with the book cover, there's a duality theme. Like, so every aspect of the book, because this is an indie book, I've been able to like have my hands in it and really try to have it, you know, show the vision.
What you want it.
Yeah. There's a lot more creative control. There's also a lot more pressure. You know, you go out and you tell someone, oh, I made this indie film, and people get excited. You tell them, oh, I made this indie book. And they're like, oh, it's an indie book? Right. This probably sucks. And it's like, no, you know, yes, there. I've had it read by people. Penguin looked at it, and you know.
Oh wow.
And then at a certain point I just said to myself, what am I waiting for? The main character in my story doesn't wait, you know, like I need to get this out there. I want people to know about it, and you know, I'm hoping that there's so many sequels that like at a certain point those who didn't take me seriously do take me seriously. Mm-hmm. Everyone else who has from the beginning gets to enjoy the story as it, you know, develops. Yeah. Because as you know, there's a huge world. Eld is not just this one tiny little piece of the story. There's going to be this epic tale told over the course of a series of books. Mm-hmm. But that has nothing to do with your question, which is...
No.
I really relate to... If I was going to stay between Ikari and Pal, because he's, you know, he uses his wits. He comes from nothing as well. His life has been way harder than Cole's. He was a slave at a certain point. But I really like that he's able to take in a situation and say, how does this benefit me? What am I going to do in this moment? Because he does go through transformations, but then even after his transformation, he's like still makes mistakes. I've been there myself, where you're like, I'm gonna change, and I've changed, and then you're actually facing that scenario where you have to prove it, and you don't.
You choose
the easy path. It's a huge problem that this all the things that happened, the events in this book. The sequel deals with the aftermath of them, all the betrayals that have happened, all of the deaths that happened, all of the failures. You know, these come up to the surface, and with Cole specifically, there's his weight is kind of an issue. He's always upset about how big he is, and then when he's captured and starving for years and gets small in the sequel, he's going to be dealing with like gaining that weight back. And then, you know, I want these characters to be real and different.
Relatable, kind of.
Yeah. You know, like I think that more people are going to be like, oh, I understand weight issues or body image issues more than like, I've got this ring.
Yeah, because
I need to destroy it. It's like,
you describe his frame as being, I wouldn't say abnormal, but he's a lot bigger than most.
Oh yeah, he's pretty huge. He's like 6'4", like 280, and then goes into like 3 years of being in a prison where you're fed only elven bread and water.
Which blew my mind, because again, as we spoke about in the last part, which was about the whole time jumping and all this stuff, and yet it was only a day, and I liked that a lot, and I was just. But again, for me, I was just like, I want to read this nice and slow so I understand it, because I'm not smart enough to understand stuff like that. I think that was a very smart thing to do, because it does show his transformation of understanding that it's more than just the look of a hero. You got to be the hero in your mind and all that.
Yeah, he's even given like super strength and given these amazing powers that are taken away, and he learns that it's really not about that. You know, this book is really about believing in yourself, ultimately. It's supposed to be inspirational. There are going to be moments that, you know, characters piss you off or they do the wrong thing.
Which is what people do, so that's normal.
Yeah, and, you know, you can't, like, no matter what, I just wanted to show a guy that every step of the way he's told no and he says yes. You know, he's like, I don't care what you say, I will do it my way. And, you know, he butts a lot of heads along the journey, but... You know, if everything went smoothly, then it would be Harry Potter. You know, no, I mean, no offense. I think that's a great series, but like, you know, Malfoy being a bully is corny, and you know, a teacher being a bully is way more interesting. But when you find out that he was Uncle Snape was always looking after him, it really takes away. You know, and it's even if there's not really a mystery element of this, and a lot of YA books force like they shoehorn a mystery into their books. To, I guess, keep people reading, and I thought, I want people to read it to keep seeing themselves and the characters, and, you know, see what other, you know, within 50 pages, how many new magical creatures am I going to come across.
And you did introduce quite a number of characters, and not even just side characters you're probably never going to see again, which is fine, and then you definitely did introduce new characters that you might, you should put in. Well, I'm not telling you what to do. But
let me get my notepad out.
Yes. Yeah. Which one did you like? but there were characters that you did introduce that probably never need to be seen again. But they did their job in this story. And do you have a tally in your head of how many you mentioned in the story?
There's a lot,
right? Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm sure there's like
more than 10.
Bartimus Thunderbeard, this dwarf smithy who has like a whole life, it seems, and he's not gonna, you're not gonna see him again.
The
you know?
First, okay, first off, the first two characters that he begins his journey with in the beginning, what was the man? What is his
roommates
name?
Or
no, the troll thing. He is it a dwarf or?
Oh yeah, yeah, the dwarf
that he's supposed to meet. The
okay. So you're talking about Harold?
Yes,
the drunkard ambassador.
Like we're never gonna see him again because he's dead.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But like, literally reading about him in the beginning, I'm like. Okay, I do this sometimes when I read. I read out loud,
yeah.
And I give voices. Like I always wanted to. I really always wanted to do like a audiobook. I always wanted to like do that. So like for some reason, I tested out at home. So like I gave him like this stupid Scottish, like drunk, like Billy Connolly. Type of funny. Craig Ferguson voice or whatever. And I'm just like, you know what? That is who he is. And then the next dwarf, I was like, that's who he is too. He has the same voice.
I always imagine Nick Offerman playing Harold.
Wow.
Because like, I always thought he'd be like
with
such
the mustache or without the mustache?
Yeah, with the mustache. With a nice scraggly beard.
Like what you got, right? Going
Yeah.
I dig that. I
feel like
cool.
He'd be, like so many people in Parks and Rec I thought would be like, when I saw Chris Pratt in Guardians. Yeah. I was like, this is Cole, except 12 years older.
Yeah, yes,
you know,
yes.
Like someone with that energy.
Well,
someone...
we got to get the studios to make this billion-dollar movie.
Hello, guys.
Because seriously.
You will make billions off of it.
Of course. But when you read, literally, as we spoke about many times before, this book being originally a screenplay and pieces and stuff reminds me of a young George Lucas who went up to Fox and said, please make my movie. Oh, I'm going to have full control? Fuck yes. Yeah. You know, like, you know, that will never happen again today.
I know.
But it just reminds me of like how when reading this story, you're just like, you just envision it in your head and you're just like, these are real people. These are real places. Well, I don't want to say real. I want to say like, you can
believable,
just imagine.
Maybe.
Yeah, you can believe it. Because they're definitely nowhere near real in the sense of like, unicorns will never happen.
So. Unfortunately.
Not black ones, not white ones, and there's both. Like, you managed to get away with two of them.
Well, I feel like black unicorns are underrepresented in this day and age. So.
I've never even heard of one. Well, then again, obviously not. Yeah. But like, it just. Every time reading it, I'm just like, make a fucking movie. Like, please, someone out there reading this, give him a chance to make this into a movie because it deserves it. Not even it will be expensive.
Yeah. But there can be toys involved.
Because you can't make a movie of this and make like a cheap 2000s, like, I'm trying to think of some like fantasy movie from like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
The ones that you could clearly tell that they were made on a $250,000 budget. Yeah. Not that. Not
looks
that.
Like Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow, or some bullshit.
Oh my God, that's a great example. Like stuff like that, or the original Dungeons and Dragons movie.
That we shall not speak of that. That movie's off limits.
Right, that one with Mr.
Marlon
Alfred
Wayans.
Himself. Yeah. So this movie needs to be made. $250 million. Let's go. Let's make this
That's
now.
Right.
Come on, whoever's out there. Like, I don't want Blue Sky making it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know
that
movie? I don't want them making it.
No, Lionsgate. Are you listening?
Yeah, them
you
or
guys,
above.
Yeah, you spend money.
Like, top is Disney. And then anyone...
Oh,
in,
yeah.
Like, oh down. Like,
well, if Disney makes it, it'll be starring Mickey Mouse, you know? Like,
oh, boy. <let's, laughs> I'm cold.
Come on, Macari.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Goofy's pal, like, clearly, you know...
Donald. I think Donald would be pal.
Donald would be pal? Okay,
yeah,
it's your story.
Cool.
But who's Akari?
Oh, man. They would have to, like,
They gotta make someone else.
Yeah, they would have to, like, introduce an Asian character, because that's,
is
you know,
any,
where
like,
going.
Mulan? She could finally grow the penis,
yeah.
And... where is the show going?
Oh, man.
Wow, we are...
Yeah, we got off track.
Yeah, big time. My fault.
I think
the
thing to take away from that is Disney, if you're listening...
Please don't
make
do what I said.
Yeah, don't do what he said, but make the movie.
No, but seriously,
sell
so
the book for me. Because I think as an indie author, I get to control that now. Like, one of the biggest fears I had was like, oh, my God, what if Scholastic actually says yes to this?
Oh, that would be great.
They're going to tell me to get rid of all the drinking scenes, mm-hmm. which I don't think... like a kid, come on.
Like, and it's not even like, no offense to Scholastic, but fuck you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I'll cut that just for your sake.
But no, but like, you don't even have anything in there. I think that's like, come on, they did Captain Underpants. Like, that's a little disgusting. So there's nothing in there. I think that it's they totally would find something. Because
I'm
that's
sure
how these companies work.
Disney, they published like a script of mine, a play when I was I think
12, right?
No, I was 18 or 17.
My God.
And it was in like a collection of
amazing
scripts, and there was like a scene where the brother is, one character's talking on the phone to the girl he likes, and the brother's like humping the bed, making noises to piss him off.
Yeah,
and they
totally
changed the, like, they changed the language so that he's jumping up and down on the bed, and like,
and
they changed certain things.
And it's not even something like where it's going to be on TV. It's
no,
just a book,
who
right?
Who the hell is even going to buy this book? You know, I mean, someone may have. My parents did. Like, but
I would like to read it, but now that it doesn't have the humping scene, I don't know if it's worth it.
I mean, that humping scene really tied it together. It's, you know, but
that's amazing.
That's what they do. They, you know,
they
find they
clean it off
anything that they can.
But at 18, you were, that's pretty amazing, though. That's,
well,
I must say, that
to
is cool.
Go a little off track on this. This play was a suicide comedy.
Oh,
it was produced at the MCC Theater summer play party, and Peter Dinklage was in it before Game of Thrones.
Holy
so
shit.
I knew when the director told me, "Oh, I've got this actor in mind. He's short, but
I can,
you know,
tell
he
you
can
how
play
short.
The dad." Yeah, so I was like, "Whatever, you know, you're a professional."
Danny
director.
DeVito's in my movie, in my play.
I think that he's probably shorter.
No, he is much shorter than Danny DeVito.
Yeah, well, so I go to rehearsal the first day, and Peter Dinklage is sitting
Holy
in the waiting room,
crap.
And I'm like, I think this is the guy.
And he, it's not like he wasn't known before
no,
Game of Thrones.
No, he
like,
was, yeah.
Like, people
time,
knew of
this
it.
This was
like,
right before The Station Agent. So,
okay.
Like, when that came out, then I started reading about him. I was like, oh, my God, the guy that was in my play. And then he was in Richard III at the Public, and I was like, oh, my God, the guy in my play. And now he's, you know.
Huge. World
yeah,
phenomenon.
Exactly. Pun intended. he's just, you know. I've had a lot of crazy experiences. Is what I can say with writing. So this is the newest journeys.
Well, maybe you'll meet someone even bigger. Not pun intended, okay? I'm not going to be that guy.
I've done
enough on this show, and you all know that. Anyway, maybe what we're trying to do is sell this book to you guys.
Not talk about Peter Dinklage.
Giant segue. That was the biggest segue we've ever done.
I know. I said tangent. We were going. We went. We're back.
So let's talk about, because you see, if he was here, he would totally brush this off to the side. He would have done a spell. Can we talk about Macario?
Yes.
Because besides Akari, he's my second favorite.
Nice.
And again, I know you want me to like Cole a lot, and I love him, but I put him in his own realm because he's the lead. You know, you kind of have to like the lead, and if you don't, the whole story falls apart. So he's in his own realm. The supporting characters, I put them. I don't want to rank them because that's mean, but again, for me, I would have to put Macario second, only because I like him a lot. He's kind of a cool character. Where did that come from? Is it also your experience in D&D?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always loved the Arthur legends and any type of story with Arthur and Merlin. And I was just like, you know what? We've had all these really old white guys that constantly, you know, like they throw fireballs or they do these. And I was like, what if you just had like this young black wizard who like is trying to make his own name in the world, and he knows more spells than he's comfortable using, and he's like a bookworm, and just trying to like take, you know, whatever you expect from a story and like twist it a little bit. And that's where he started. And my friend Jeff Nash, who I used to play D&D with, he played a monk that was the most similar character to this. And I just, you know, he's gone through a lot of changes in the rewrites, because when I was writing the book, I actually found that I was like, oh man, like I've left so much out. And in my head, he's this very complete character. Mm-hmm. And I really spent a lot of the time on the rewrites with Macario to refine him, to take out spells that I was using before. Because with magic, you don't want it to just be willy-nilly and easy.
Yeah.
I, you know, in this world, the wizards, they have to study, and they have their scholars compared to sorcerers who don't exist anymore, but the sorcerers...
Okay, so they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, the sorcerers are as far as everyone knows, extinct.
Is that true? Is that true with clerics as well? Because that's something Antonio wanted to ask. Yeah,
clerics, they what still is the deal exist. With,
okay, they still exist.
We don't see a cleric beyond when Hikari leaves this churchyard in the beginning. He was speaking with a cleric, mm-hmm. but that didn't really have anything to do with the story, so I didn't write about it. Mm-hmm. But I know about it because this is my world. And you'll actually see his cleric. The sequel will open with a flashback to kind of give some story behind Hikari's.
I was just going to propose a Hikari prequel novel because
well, you'll get a chapter or two
because that would be well worth reading as well. Yeah. So okay, so there are no more sorcerers to be clear in this universe,
as far as people know.
Do you want me to call it a universe? I don't know what to call it.
I guess. I mean. It's just so people get offended right now. Because
like universe is like always thrown. It's thrown around now. It's like
you know, if I'm in the same conversation as awesome. Marvel Universe, like, I will take it. Okay.
No, so no sorcerers, but there are clerics. They're not extinct.
Yeah, the clerics are strictly they channel power from the gods that they worship. The wizards have knowledge that they learn from spell books, and they have to master the rhymes and also like hand gestures. Druids deal more with nature magic.
Right.
I don't think there's a druid in this one.
I don't recall reading one.
Yeah, no, there isn't. So I sometimes I get mixed up because they're already in my head.
Yeah, you're writing other books.
And the chronological order is like, there's nothing in the books really that is going to cover the beginning. That's stuff I'm using for the website to kind of bring people back.
Mm-hmm. Actually, as you mentioned the book, and how you write. Is your process like, I'm going to write next book 2, and then 3, and then 4, and then, if there's a 4 and 5, and all that. Do you do that, or do you just like, this is going to happen in 5, I'm going to set that up to 5. How is your process? Do you come up with like an end, have you come up with an end-all for this already?
Well, not an end-all, because I want every book to end with a promise of a new adventure.
Okay.
Because, if it never continued, it would continue in someone else's imagination. But I think, like I said, I've got 5 screenplays, but as of now I have 7 books planned, 2 of which have not been written in any form. Mm-hmm. But I've taken material and moved it around as I needed to. There was the opening of the book actually opened with the capture of the princess and all these things that I was like, you know what? We need to cut to the chase and just like open up with Cole being angry because that's like his character's journey.
I think that was a smart thing to do.
Trim the fat. Yeah. If people want to know about more, that's like the promise of like signing up for the email list on the website is that I want to do a monthly email that gives a little mythology behind the world. I've written tons of mythology now. We haven't sent anything out yet because the website's only been up for like 25 days or something.
Sure.
So we're still collecting. The first weekend we launched the website was the book expo at the Javits Center, and I didn't even have the books like to give out free. Wow. I had these promotional magnets that I was giving everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping people have, even if they don't have the book, they got the magnet on their fridge and they walk by and they're like, oh, that's interesting. I'll check out the website and maybe sign up for the book where you can read more to fill in the world. Because I think the book should focus strictly on Cole's journey and the people that are with him for that period of time.
Yeah, I mean, because I can only imagine writing one book. I can only imagine. When I wrote my senior project for college, I wrote a script and it took a couple of weeks or months. And that was only like 20 pages, and it took me forever. Yeah. So I can only imagine the struggle or fun or both that you had writing not just one but 5 screenplays, and the moving forward of making possibly 7. When, if possible, do you even know a timetable for when maybe a sequel will come out?
Yeah, this Christmas.
Oh, that soon. Oh,
I've got more than half of it written.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that it's not the first draft. It's always subsequent drafts.
Right.
So, like, with those 5 screenplays, I wrote them in 5 months. Like, every month I'd write the sequel and all the people would come over and read it. They'd come back because they're like, what's happening next? Right. And then I got, you know, so enthusiastic about it, I took it out to L.A., and, you know, that's where I started hearing, like, turn it into a book.
Right, right, right.
So yeah. The book process has been harder because initially I'm looking at this screenplay that I love so much, and I was like, how do I change it? And I rewrote it once, and I ended up hiring an editor, Daryl Edelman, from he's freelanced. He's a freelance editor now, but he used to work at Marvel and DC Comics, and he worked on a lot of like really famous publications for X-Men and stuff. And he knew, you know, what I was going for, but he helped me transition from like how you tell a story, which is all in film, which is all visuals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then dialogue that leads you to believe things, to like actually the inner character. And that's where I focused a lot of the rewrites, and I must have done at least 30 different drafts.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
And you know, when you're trying to like raise money to buy an engagement ring, and you're trying to then like do, you know, all that,
you have a life outside the writing.
Exactly. So you know, getting to this point where I actually have a finished copy that I, you know, was willing to share with the world. And at a certain point, my wife, Brianna, is like, you gotta stop waiting for it. It's never gonna be perfect, you know? So the story is fun, like, just get it out now and, like, fix problems with it by making sequels better is, like, the goal. So, yeah. Like, any sort of... I've heard things from people that have read it and they liked it, but they want to know more about these dwarves. They want to know more about these characters, and it's like... You know, oh, this one character, a gypsy character that's in one chapter, they're like, when is she coming back? And I'm like, never. I want every character to be important and real.
That's the lady that gave the foreshadowing.
The fortune teller, yeah, yeah.
Interesting about that, Antonio had was wondering, what was your reasoning behind giving that kind of important part of the story so early to us? Was there like a real reasoning?
It's a setup. You know, I want it to be something that, you know, from the beginning, it's like, even the people that like know fate and have seen it or can read it or whatever are going to tell him he's not going to make it. Right. He's not going to be who he wants to be. And you know, that I just like, I think if you hold that off until later or you put it in at the very beginning, it's a little cheating. Like I like, It's not right in the middle of the story, but it's just before the middle.
Right.
And he learns these things about how things will unfold, and then, you know, is it really going to unfold this way? Is he going to make decisions that change his fate, or is he going to learn to accept it? Like, these are questions that I just want... I don't necessarily want to have answers yet, but, like, I want people to start thinking about. And so much of this type of fantasy world is... not this mine specifically, but any fantasy writing is based on like what is someone destined to do.
Yeah.
And I just want a character that's destined not to succeed, because if you know that's like your selling point, it's like, oh, maybe I'm like this character because, you know, I want a lot in my life, but I don't know if I'll ever be able to get it. And what is, you know, what is accepting something below what you think you deserve, or what is accepting what you actually deserve, or how do you, you know, encourage your friends around you? Like, a lot of different things that I could see being up for like a book club discussion. You know, that's something that I want to get done, is I want to have like a book club question list, so that you can at the end of the book like talk with your friends about decisions people made and like what would you do in that scenario. Because I do want people to see more than just the action adventure. I do put a lot of my own personal beliefs in there. Mm-hmm. There's a whole, during the part where they're like walking through the endless forest and they're constantly lost, they talk about what they believe in, the different gods or the magic, or, you know, like I want to get deep where it's not like, whoa, TMI, Andrew. It's more of, you know, like, let's have these kids who are, you know, capable of thinking about these things. Mm-hmm. Like, let's give them characters to look up to and see, like, oh, do I, you know, fall in Pal's line of thinking where it's like, life is shit. You know, you got to just get what you can while you're here.
Life is shit. No,
well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I want people to see that, like, these are real people in a fake world, and they're still dealing with the crap we're dealing with. It's just, these are the Elden days. You know,
I think that's why people like, well, I think anyone that's reading this gets that idea. Like, these are real people. that, like I said to you before, I think I said this off mic. Like when reading it, you could envision them all in front of you. Mm-hmm. Like a startup for a video game, like pick your character, you know, like you're like, and then you see all their personality just in their movement and their facial expressions. And you see their statistics on the side. And
what how kind of weapons they
use. Yeah. Like, and cause they're kind of like real people. They could be right there in front of you. And, and the world they're living in may be extremely fake and not real, but there are many aspects of it that are very realistic and very lifelike and very, earth-like in a sense. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't go to a bar? I mean, come on. who doesn't ride unicorns, guys? Come on.
Yeah,
I mean, every Saturday. you do. I feel like I keep saying it.
And there's problems. You know, these characters have issues.
And yes, issues and problems that we all go through.
Like the main villain and his daughter have like a really strong relationship, as opposed to the hero and her father. They have a very cold relationship. The elves, in my world, they are not these affectionate characters.
Can I say one thing? Throughout reading this book, I think I hated the elves more than I hated the goblins. And never in any other world would that make sense. Yeah. Elves are supposed to be like the high, mighty people that you're supposed to respect, you know? And they're assholes.
They're backwards for a reason. In my world, Sylvan are the characters that are more similar to that Lord of the Rings. This world takes place where the elves were like one of the first races to be born, and then they were born in a tree, and they like everything with them is
they're
nature.
Like Keebler elves.
And you know this doesn't go into it in the book, but they take their realm, their kingdom, into this other plane of existence to escape what they see as like, you know, the destruction of Earth or Eld in this. And you know, like that's, I just wanted to take you the typical things you get from these stories so that it's familiar enough to people who don't even read fantasy and then twist it a little.
You know, you saying that about them taking the plane of existence and moving on. I'm an environmentalist, right? But there are some environmentalists that are like beyond wacky do crazy. Uh-huh. They remind me of the ones that are like, we just got to move the whole Earth and move it somewhere else.
Imagine if you could. You'd have heroes in prison. Yeah.
That's what they sound like to me. I don't know why. But Antonio had an interesting thought. Because let's get back to Hikari for a second.
Yeah.
He wanted to know, and I don't think this is true, and I might be wrong.
Okay.
Because you're the guy who wrote it. Again, I don't think this is true. But is Hikari a dragon himself, or was it just some type of symbolic meaning that you had going on?
No, Hikari is not a dragon.
So he's just.
I don't think it spoils anything to say that dragons in this world do have a power to transform and turn into different beings, so that it's hard to figure out who's really a dragon and who's not. Until later when you realize that there's a whole side of dragons that would never do that because that would, you know, disgrace them. But Hikari is a human. I think most of the characters that you follow are human. Pal, Cole, Hikari, Makario. Domina is an elf. She's the princess of the elves, but she's also the lead ranger. And
the Big Daddy Evil... which we'll get to in a minute.
He's
something else. You want to love him and hate him at the same time. Okay. No. And Tony wanted to just clarify that.
Okay.
The evil Mr. Big Evil. I mean, what do you call him in the not his real name, but when he's a dragon, the Emerald.
The Emerald Enormity.
Yeah. That is a cool nickname. I would like to be called that. I think they should call, instead of calling it the Wizard of Oz, they should just call it the Emerald Enormity. And that is so much a better title for that movie. I don't know why. But anyway, I don't want to butcher his name because throughout the whole book, I'm reading it one way, and I might be wrong. So I want to say the way I've been saying it is ill-eater?
Yes.
Ill-eater, okay. Ill-eater, yes. I don't want to sound like I'm like, so he's being racist.
Yeah, no. I've heard about that, and you know, I think he's the most
I like the name. I
complicated, but I just...
He is complicated, yeah. Which is why he deserves a complicated name.
Yeah, and ill as a first name kind of just... I think lends itself to an evil disgusting. Warlock. So,
is behind that name, I'm not seeing any. By looking at it, I'm not seeing any puzzle here. So, where did this come from? Besides ill,
I don't even remember at this point. Wow. That was one where when I first started outlining the series, I wrote just names of dragons that I thought sounded cool before I started. Hexor has just been my go-to dragon bad guy in any D&D. Illithir was one I came up with in sequel. You'll meet Brill and Thrall, and then there's I can't even say some of their names, ruining things.
Oh, I was gonna say I just wrote them and I don't know how to pronounce.
I don't even want to go there.
Okay,
because it becomes something that it's not even in this book have someone actually. Figure out what's going on, but with the dragons, more often than not they were what I thought sounded like a dragon's type of name, like could this dragon roar this
now is because throughout the whole book I wasn't sure, is he a real actual dragon or is he a warlock first or a dragon first?
So he's a dragon.
He's a dragon.
He's a warlock dragon, so but he takes on the form of a human several times.
Okay. But he's mainly a dragon. He was born a dragon.
Yeah, in this world you have the Confederacy of Dragons, Hexor, and then you have Illithir, who is this dragon of Elfwood.
Who
is trying to stop.
Spoiler.
Okay. Yeah, sorry guys, but...
Just in case you didn't know that.
I feel like this is the kind of thing, though, you can know the plot and still enjoy.
There's so many little pieces to this story as to how he got to that... To that cell, we haven't spoken about that, and we might not. I don't know. I don't know if we want to spoil that for Michael over here, but there are so many little pieces that you're saying. Yeah, you can know the whole story, and
still have a good time reading.
I could say right now, which I'm not, but I could say right now the last sentence from the book, but I'm not because I'm not an asshole. But I could say it and still not ruin the story. I don't think.
No.
But I'm not going to say it. But I'm still, you still don't ruin the story because you're like, how did they get to that point? I don't understand people with spoilers. I never really got that. I mean.
If it's spoiled by just finding out the plot is not a good story. The story is every step of the way.
Right.
It's all the.
It's like the journey.
Yeah. And each sentence, I spent so long rewriting sentences to make sure that sentence expresses what I want to get across. And usually it's I either want someone to laugh or I want someone to be ugh, or, I want them to have some sort of emotion. And I think that that's more of important when reading it than being the good guy saves the day in the end.
I think it was the chapter 38. I think there was that last sentence there, which, again, I'm not going to say what it is in that chapter. But there's a thing that happens and I'm just I wanted to go to bed, right? And I was just now I gotta keep reading. Not that it's a struggle to read your book. It's just I wanna go to sleep. But this is so fucking good, I can't put my phone down. Yeah. Damn it. So damn you for writing. And you write really fucking interesting story. I don't know. I wanted to put my phone down. You made me stay up to 1 in the morning.
Nice.
On some days. But hey, that's what happens when you're reading something good. I don't know, so back to Illithir. Again, don't want to say it wrong.
No, it's good for people to hear it.
I-L, right? Apostrophe T-I-R.
Yeah.
I wrote it right. Uh-huh. And this was not even looking at it. I was just off the top of my head.
That's good that you remembered his name.
So when we meet him, again, as I said, we meet him in the mirror, and we're just how did that happen?
Yeah,
he's trapped in a mirror.
What... And I know you mentioned the whole plane of existence and time. I'm not questioning you. I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Why bring in something that complicated to understand into a story that already is quite simple to understand? So why throw in that very complex shit to understand now? Because I fucking loved it.
Yeah, no, I just always...
was like, whoa, why, whoa, from, 4 years, whoa.
Well, from what I've learned about from, like, Dungeons & Dragons, Lord of the Rings, you know, you have these elves that live forever, and I just never got that. You know, like, oh, they decided that I'm going to take a boat into Deathland or wherever they go. And for me, it was
have
like...
a timeshare there.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to see, like, here's a reason why if they live in a time, like a fluid time plane of existence, that their lives could be stretched out and that things that happen within that plane happen at a different speed in another place. And then because I just thought, you know, well, we already have this world, like, let's put them in this cell that will allow Cole to mature because he, you know, it's getting close to the middle of the story and he still hasn't learned his lessons. He keeps getting bailed out even when he's defeated by whether it's, you know, another villain or not. He's getting bailed out and I needed to, like, take a time to, like, slow it down. And I also needed a way to introduce this major villain and show that, one, like, he can be contained in a certain sense so that, you know, he's already been caught once. Why he's been caught is explained, but also that, like, how much it takes to keep him contained. And, like, they need to outsource the elves. They go to their cousins, the high elves, the Sylvan, to, like, create this magical mirror. And I just thought it'd be a really interesting point to be like, all right, we've seen him with all these super powerful heroes. Now let's see him with a super powerful villain. Mm. And I tried very, very hard to make him sympathetic. And to have him go, like, which is why I think you don't like the elves so much, is, you know, like, these characters that we're supposed to just like because you see the word elf, oh, they're a good guy. It's like,
right.
Well, you know, in Great Britain...
I have another question, but keep going.
These characters were tricksters. They weren't...
Right.
They were more like Puck from A Midsummer Night's Dream. And, like, you know, these fairy characters, the fair folk, they weren't just these really nice guys that gave cool weapons and... You know, and granted wishes, like, they, I want them to be like a real race that has, you know, their own set of morals. And when anyone crosses a line, they act very harshly.
Why? Now I understand that. Why? Again, it's not your problem. It's nothing you did. It's just, it was a fucking unicorn, man. Like, all he did was accidentally kill a unicorn. Why are they being so pricks about it?
Well, like, unicorns are very rare in this world. Okay.
I mean, they're and rare also, here.
they're so rare, you'll never see
them. Yeah. But it's like, no, like, I'm reading it, and I'm going, oh, poor unicorn. All right, let's move on. And they're like, we sentence him to death. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, well, unicorns have generally represented sort of the carefree innocence of nature, which is why only virgins and the fair folk can see them, these unicorns.
That was a fuck you to him when they said that to him.
That was another little joke.
When he's told only virgins could see it, he was like, well, I tried. Like, he was like,
I haven't met the right
woman. Yeah, I haven't met the right woman. Like, I'm trying.
And which Pal tells him there's millions of
right
women. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get to see, like, how people...
So, but a unicorn, like, I it's just me being stupid, but I get it. It's intricate to the story. But it's just me just going, but who, like, no one's going to get that mad over a unicorn.
That's, and I think that's a good thing is, you know, that, you know, why would we get mad? But an elf
who of course.
Is, like, different basically the protector of nature, they, you know, they take that as the greatest of offenses. You know, they and in the time of unicorns, really, there being more than just, like, a few, that's they probably were unicorn riders themselves. To have one die was originally, you know,
Is it the only white unicorn left? Was it the only?
No, there's several more, but there is Diesel is the only
black
unicorn. Okay. And
because he came out of a dragon.
Yeah, I mean, so like, we'll just go there. So
there's a reason.
Yeah, he's actually born of the villain.
Is it part dragon, the unicorn?
Well, he'll
fly?
He'll have these the spirit
of a,
of Illithir within him, which is why he's...
Oh, no, this is not a good unicorn.
Well, you'll see how he becomes closer to Tara, is what I'll say about the sequel, even though Cole is riding him and trying to. And
He won't buck. He won't. He won't be his.
Yeah, he
his
won't help him bury Hikari. He won't. You know, he'll ride him, but like only if he wants to. Like, he becomes a foil where you expect these unicorns to be like, oh, these magical beasts that are so nice.
Yeah.
Similar to how like the elves, when you, before you read the story, you think elves are a certain way. Unicorns will then be a certain way. That I just, my thing is subversion of like expectations. Whatever you expect of a classical fantasy.
Throw it out the door.
Yeah, or like twist it away around so that you're just like, what? You know, why wouldn't a princess want to leave? Like, she's been there for 40 years. Yeah. You know, like, how could she have somehow fallen in love with her captor? But, you know, that I'm sure that's happened maybe to a princess, but...
I'm sure in real life, too. Yeah. Who knows? Nasty. No. Yeah, no, because with the black unicorn part, I only say black because that's what it is. You know?
Yeah,
and white because you never gave him a name. So, for those that are offended, so okay, so that's gonna be interesting in the sequel.
Well, Cole names the black unicorn
Diesel. Yeah, sorry, he does actually name it.
Yeah,
he does, which I found so funny because all I pictured in my head was two people. Nash from the WWE and Shaq. All I pictured him was riding Shaq onto the sunset.
Sorry, Shaq.
All I pictured was hilarious. Shaq being ridden by that's a Cole, which could be dirty if you want to look at it that way. But not.
It's like the fan fiction that'll turn into 50 Shades.
Oh my God! Diesel and then whatever. and then a book comes out from that. Yeah,
exactly.
Ew, 50 Shades of Diesel.
Yeah.
Wow, that could be a gas story too, like a gasoline story.
I think that's where his name came from. I just in my head, I was like, I need a name. Oh, Diesel.
He's strong.
Yeah.
No, so does that mean that he runs longer? But back to Illithyr, which we've been talking about a while, is the idea to have him be the one that was with the princess. Well, not with. He took her. To have him, the one that just befriended Cole, was so smart to put all the story together. But at the same time, also having a daughter named Tara, you know, and her possibly being the one that he falls in love with to seal the destiny and the things.
Basically.
Without really giving it away. But no, so I'm pretty sure that's what you're going with.
That's where we're going.
That was really, I mean, smart putting the story together, like I just said. But was there a real reason to have her have relations with him? And she could have had relations with anyone else, like a slave he had. Was there like a real reasoning to have them connect?
Well, yeah, I think her storyline would be the second most important over the course of the series because she's this chosen one.
Right.
But also I think it was important to have yet again another roadblock where Cole and Tara are adversaries in this first book and several books subsequently. She's trying to kill him the whole second book.
Thanks.
Wow. So yeah,
I'm looking forward to that now.
I wanted to just show, like having people be able to change. Mm-hmm. You know, you start off as a villain, you can end up a hero, vice versa. And I think this is, Tara is the product of a princess and a dragon. So she's got both these human royal blood qualities to her, and then she's also got the dragon inside her, and half dragons change over the course of their life, so she won't be as human as she was in this one.
So, and when will... I don't want to find out, because I actually want to know.
Yeah, yeah.
In the books. But will we start to see that evolution early on?
It's very slow.
It's very slow. So it's we might slow. Not even see it in the second book.
No. You'll see steps. She takes on more of the role that Pal played in the first book than the second one.
Let's go on to, what is going to happen in the second book? Because I really want to know. Pal had a huge role in the first book.
Mm.
Huge role in the second book?
Yes.
Okay. Hikari, Antonio and I want to know this really badly.
Yeah.
Because this is fucking important to me and to him. Probably more important to him. His brother, Hikari's brother.
Yes.
It seems to be, like, we're going to get to know him a lot in the second book.
Yeah.
Does he, I don't want to say this because it sounds weird, but does he become Hikari 2.0?
Basically.
Like he becomes the other pal.
He's the new paladin. Okay. But their fallen paladin, it's right. Similar to the samurai when your lord dies, then you become Ronin. In this world, when the cleric dies, you become fallen paladin, so you have no master that you serve, and you see how that happened mm-hmm. in the very beginning of the book. And basically, you see where Hikari and Kage completely changed. And one, even though he's a fallen paladin, Hikari has kept his code of honor, and it kind of threw Kage into this horrible nightmare of a situation. Not necessarily drinking. You guys can't see, but he's doing the universal I'm getting drunk sign. Where it's more of he's just bitter over it. So it's his redemption is the second one.
Okay.
Where you have the mission that sparks the second book is that he's going to bring his Hikari's sword to the brother as like a peace offering because they have this rift you don't know about, and it's really like seeing, you know, him accept what his, you know, brother did and then forgive him. And the second one's a lot about forgiveness, Domina forgiving Pal for all the things mm-hmm. he did.
Ooh, I see something happening there.
Yeah. Oh. There are new characters coming. So
okay, I have a theory for the second the second book. Don't say if I'm right or wrong. Yeah. Because if you do, then I'm just going to be sad. I'm still going to read the second book. But I'm going to be sad, like, oh, I know this already. I don't know. I have a feeling, and don't tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I just have a feeling, maybe, that the Sun Sword is going to be given to then Cole. Cole's going to be having it. He's not going to lose it this time. Like, he's lost and broken everything else.
Why would that change that? Oh! I haven't said anything.
That's true. You have it. Also, maybe Domina and Pal get a little freaky, possibly, because I know that's what he wants. He really wants that. If he's been eyeing her every second of the day. Like she walks by, and he's like, oh, hello. She must be, like, the most beautiful thing in the world if he's
yes.
It's something about her that
she also, likes. In the book, looks at him. There's a lot of...
Right, that is true. That is moments...
Not really understanding because elves are very closed off and not affectionate. So
are they a one? It seems like the races, like the goblins and the elves, are like a one race type of people. Like they only meld and mix with their own. And that's going to be tough for her.
Yes.
That might be tough for her to open up, as you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. That's it. And I really. Because I don't know. But I really hope good things for Macario and Squeaky McSqueaks, as I like to call her. Because she says Wizzy Wiz, and I just think that's the most adorable thing in the world.
She's got a different... She's like that character in A Land Before Time, Ducky, I think it is, who's like, yep. She's that very
little stupid
cute
dinosaur. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, stupid.
No, she's
cute.
Not stupid. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
I hope they live. Whether or not that's true, whether or not that's true,
I'm not saying.
I hope they do because they deserve to live. Like they deserve to help, and because in all honesty, kind of without Macario, half this stuff wouldn't happen. Happen as it sounds like a bad thing. He wouldn't have gotten out of certain things, or they wouldn't have all gotten out of certain scenarios without him putting a spell, which they needed. So he's probably more important than the others. Who knows?
Very powerful.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I hope the best for the second book. Can you give us a title or no?
The second is The Giant of Heaven's Peak.
The Giant of Heaven's Peak. That sounds like there's going to be a giant on Heaven's Peak. Because the first book had a dragon of Elfwood.
Yes.
So
there's going to be...
I like your... You don't
star,
fuck us.
The third one's title.
You don't say Order of the Phoenix and like, what the fuck is that?
No, you kind of know
Prisoner
it's
of
like
Azkaban. Who the fuck's that?
Location.
Yeah, that's good. It's smart. You're not like, because we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
We already know it exists. Like, I don't want to be fucked with the title. Yeah, I don't like fucking titles that fuck you over.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, what's Independence Day
Resurrection or whatever the fuck? Resurgence or whatever. What does that mean?
Like, you tie in Resurgence or Rise of or, you know, like, those generic
Well, those
things.
Movies are great, though. There's plenty. I love those movies.
No, it's not. It's not about that. I was thinking more of The Dark Knight Rises. Oh. You know, like, just.
Like, what does that mean?
There are certain words that are, like, overused in these.
Rises, Origins.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Evolution, you know, like, give me a break. Like, for me,
it's
like,
Voltron.
You
want to
be promised monster and location. Like,
give
a
me the monster
here.
Give me
the
location.
This is where it's going to be. You know, it's going to take place in this location mainly, and they're going to deal with this character, and also broadening from just dragons. There will always be dragons in this series, but
is that it, are those the big bads in the universe?
Hexor is the
he's the big one.
Yeah,
he's the Sauron of the. I'm not comparing.
No,
just,
he would be more of a Saruman.
Oh, fuck.
Because, like, I don't even want
to
go.
Yeah, don't compare. I don't want. I didn't mean to.
No.
I
it's just you have. You have several dragons, and yes, dragons kind of
but they
are
the
most
big,
powerful race.
There's a food chain.
Yeah, they dragons are on top, and then, like, the other
Cole's
races.
Cole's way on the bottom. He's working his way up.
He's happy to be on the list.
Yeah, he's on the list.
He's finally on the list.
He's on the list. That's if you're a Chris Jericho fan, you would understand why I said it so many times. It's a little on joke we have for no reason. But okay, so I'm just baffled that we even had you on. I'm just amazed by the story, and I just really want you to understand that we want this book to succeed, and I hope everyone who has listened over the last I don't know how long, hours or days or weeks it took you to listen to this episode or episodes, have mercy on your souls because it was very long, but it was worth it because we had a lot of fun. We delved into everything, and I think. You know, from not just for me, and Mike, you can speak for yourself. You have a mic, so I won't let you.
No.
I won't you say anything. But Antonio wanted you to know that he thanks you so much for coming here and sharing your story.
Thank you. Yeah.
And we hope this is from all of us here, nothing but the best for your book and for everything to go from. And man, Mike, you got anything to say?
No, I definitely interested in reading it, and I had nothing to go off of. I didn't even know. He didn't tell me the name of the book or anything, so I had, like, nothing to go off.
I was like, Mike, you want to come Monday? What? Oh, there's a guy coming.
Well, that's good for me, because hopefully you're hearing some of this, and your interest is
piqued. It is. It's piquing my interest a lot, and wanting to read it.
Yeah, I didn't know.
You didn't spoil anything.
Yeah, we didn't know when we were doing this, so I didn't know if you were even going to come, so I didn't want to tell you anything.
No, and I think it's the kind of thing where you can have someone who's, you know, your age, my age, older, younger, boy, girl. There's something in it for everyone.
We're all the same age, man. What are you talking about?
I'm not definitely not older. But I think why I did this was, like, I want to return to, like, a joyful experience when you read. I was a kid that did not read.
I was the opposite.
I didn't like it. And then I read Calvin and Hobbes when I was 9 years old.
Oh,
my
God.
Life changed. And ever since then, I've cared about books, and I've been, like, someone who is a proponent of, like, getting people to read, and I've gone to schools, and I do workshops on storytelling.
Oh, my God,
I think, you know, if I'm going to, you know, try to inspire people, like, I want to do it with my characters. I want to give you something familiar so that you're willing to take a chance on it, but subversive so that every time you think, aha, that's where it's going, no, it went in a different direction, but it's not out of the blue. It still makes sense. And so that's, you know, I wanted to have characters that are strong female characters. I know that sounds generic, because, you know, people are jumping on that bandwagon, but
it's a bandwagon that needs to be jumped on.
Yeah, you know, you need
to
have
it needs to,
you know,
stay too age. Long enough, you know.
Exactly. How many times are we going to have the reluctant hero?
As long as you do
day?
It right. As long as you do it right. Don't, like, force it in there.
Yeah,
if it's
there's
not
nothing
forced. And,
forced.
Yeah, and you I mean, people could say, too many people have the woman that's in distress and all that nonsense. But if it tells a story, it tells a story. But then, you know, if you have a space for someone else, you put them in there. Like, you don't, if you don't need it, you don't need it. If you need it, you need it.
And why deny yourself all the different cultural, you know, myths
lore
that we can borrow from and create something new?
Yeah.
And that's what I've loved.
I never understood why people are against that. Like, just, it's part of, you see it every day. You, some, most of us are all different fucking things. So let us embrace it in the entertainment that we consume.
If you go to Geeks of Color, the website, that's a great website. It's got tons of information and point of views that you don't get every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. It's why limit yourself? We live in this great country where immigration used to be popular. It's not, but like it's a place where it's, you know, not I grew even, up in Brooklyn, every single type of it's everywhere
hard,
I went.
It's hard for us to like understand the other side because it's like we don't see, it's rare that we see that.
Yeah.
And when we do, we're hurts. Just like, yeah. And when we do see that side, we're kind of just like, what are you even fucking talking about? Like,
yeah.
Because I can never fathom why not. I don't know, it's for a different conversation, but like,
yeah.
I can never understand why you would be against having someone like here. Like, I don't know.
It's a make believe world.
Yeah.
That is, it deserves.
And that's
like.
Why we need to keep putting it out there.
Yeah.
And I think, without getting political, I think, the next 4 years would be an even better for the art world because then they could open their mouth more mm-hmm. and say certain things.
Yeah.
That to let certain people know that, hey, this is what's right. That's not what's
you, yeah, well,
what's
with,
so right.
You know, a growing voice of hatred is out there and feeling empowered now.
Yeah.
The growing voice of acceptance and inclusion needs to be as loud, if not louder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one way to do that is to take people away from the world they live in to see things from a different point of view. You know, someone was like, is the dragon based on Trump? I was like, no, this dragon was written when Obama was in office.
Yeah.
You know, like, these guys are not going to affect my life that much to change my story.
Right.
But you should be wary of anyone who promises you all these things that you want, and their only power comes from the people that they make pacts with.
Yeah.
So
if you want to look at it as that, but it's clearly not, you know?
Yeah,
so
no, it's...
Take whatever
everyone should be able to look at this and be like... good and bad, and that's pretty easy.
Those are the best
out.
Stories. That's why Star Wars are so successful. That's why
yeah.
most heroes' stories are so successful, because that's what people want to see. Good versus bad, and that's it. Like, it's so...
Well, in our everyday life, bad or indifferent wins so many
right.
battles that, you know, you want to... If you're going to take time to travel somewhere in your imagination, you want... you know, the people that deserve to succeed. But you also want to struggle, like, see their struggles so that you feel like you can connect with them, because everyone struggles to get what they want.
And that's why we need people like you writing more. Because, you know, you understand not just only your view, but you could open up and not necessarily understand the other view, but you could sympathize or empathize with the other side, or
make them human
and make them like maybe not seem so bad, or maybe not seem so disgusting and slimy, or whatever we may be talking about.
Yeah.
And that's why more people, and that's why you need to get these books out, man. You need to give us number two very soon.
My goal is to give two per year until it's done.
Awesome.
So
well,
that I could be done within 3 or 4 years.
Well, before we go, You wanna tell us your social media? You wanna plug yourself or whatever? Give them all, man.
Okay. Well, you can go on Facebook and check out the Facebook page Legends of Eld. It's a fan page. There we post illustrations. I've still got more coming. We'll post about events, book readings, book signings. And then more about like the actual people that have become collaborators in a certain sense. So Legends of Eld, you'll find it on Facebook. You can follow Cole on Twitter. He's at Legends of Eld. Then you can go to the website legendsofeld.com. That's where you can sign up for the email list. And if you do, you'll be getting exclusive content, which will fill out the myths of the world, so that we know that the book starts with Cole and his journey, but we're going to see how the world was created, the old gods battling the new gods, giving birth to the dragons, how the sorcerers came about, where the dwarves and the sylvan and the gnomes all split off from the elves, why the elves took their realm into a different plane of existence. All these different things will be explained in material exclusive to the website, and you will not be spammed if you join it. You're not going to get 50,000 emails saying buy the book. I think that the best
I mean,
way,
I think you should be.
I think you should buy the book, but I think the best way to get into it is like reading about the characters, which you they all have character bios. You'll read about the world, and then hopefully you'll take a chance on it and tell your friends about it, because indie books, they deserve to be read. There's a terrible stigma against it, and the reason is because the publishing houses are terrified of talented writers that don't need them. The only thing that we need from you are PR people. And you know what? Like, if you have enough friends, you'll have PR people help. You also can have a grassroots campaign. You know, this, my book will live and die based on your recommendation. So if you do buy the book and you do read it, please give it a review, an honest review. I read them, of course. I would love every review to be 5 stars and glowing, but like, you know, I need to grow, and I'm not going to change the story for you, sorry, but I will improve the storytelling aspects if there are legitimate arguments. And I think that, you know, it's something that once you're 9 years old, if you're able to just read, you can pick this up. It's not too complicated. It's not something that is too mature. You know, the themes may be deep, but I think that kids are deep. You know, they're going to pick it up and understand it. And then if you're older and you've always liked this type of thing, it offers a lot of chuckles. That's what I heard from someone that read it in Wisconsin, and they were like, oh, you know what, my friend recommended this because she's friends with your wife's mother. Like, you know, it's a whole chain of events.
It sounds like a Wisconsin thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why I said that. But,
but you know, people, I think that they like it. You know, I think that they will like
they
it
will
if they try it.
They'll love it.
And the best part is that I grew up in a city where I read the most on the subway. So they're very short chapters that you can digest.
They are, yeah.
And, you know, there's 40 chapters within 250 pages, actually less, I think. And you can, you know, get on one stop, two stops later, you'll have finished a chapter and then can move on with your life. And, you know, it's been designed to be, the book is designed to be reader friendly. So there's a lot going on, but I want it to be accessible to everyone who gets their hands on it. It's not going to be, oh my God, fantasy where I can't remember everyone's name. This is, it's not like Training Wheels, but it's like, this is an introduction to people who have only seen fantasy movies, but have never sat down and read an 800 page book. Cause I have no interest in that either. I would not want to torture someone with that. You know, I'd rather give you guys chunks of a story that you could keep coming back to and read other things in between.
The only person's book that I would read that's 1,000 pages is Stephen King. But anyway.
Yeah, but he also is the master.
Yeah, he's a god. Yeah. But anyway, listen, what he just said, times a million. Go out there, check out the book. Not, I mean, read the book, fucking book. Read the book, buy the book, do everything to support this cause that is him and his great talent. He's going to have more books out there. So if you pick up this one, you get to pick up a second one. and hopefully a third, fourth, up to, he says up to 7, and possibly even more down the line. Who knows what he does after that? Like, there's prequels and sequels and all these beautiful things that are going to be happening.
I won't dilute the story, I promise. That's the one promise I'll make right now. I will never dilute it just to make some extra bucks.
Well, if you have, no, I'm just kidding. No. But yeah, everything he said, times 1,000, 1,000,000, whatever you guys got to do to make this man swimming in cash, because he deserves it. This book's amazing. And as he said, it's an easy, not easy read, but like, you know, well, it is an easy read. Like, it's a quick read. You'll be done in a day or two, depending on how you read. It's for all ages, anywhere from 0 to 1,000 years old. Like, you could read this book. And yes, I know there are 1,000-year-olds out there. You're just not saying it. No, I'm just kidding.
Probably dragons.
Probably there's dragons, man. There's fucking unicorns, man. There's unicorns out there. But anyway, follow them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter. All right, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, buy the book. And you, of course, as always, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, and anywhere else you find us, because I don't remember where we're all at. We're everywhere. And you guys, remember, not just liking him, but like us. Share us, too. Share this episode. You get to share this episode. You get to share his ideas in our discussion, in our conversation. So it'll be great. So remember, guys, always check out Facts Not Included for the latest movie news and apparently book news now. So that's something we're going to be getting into as well.
Fantastic.
All thanks to Mr. A.D. Greer right here. I've been your host, Peter Cabranes, and I've been joined by our producer, Mike Votto.
Mike Votto. As you said my name.
Oh, well, okay. All right.
We'll go with it.
And again, thank you so much, Mr. A.D. Greer,
thank you.
For joining
thanks
us.
Thanks for having podcast. Me.
Thank you so much. And, of course, the ones that are here in the empty seats that we have lined up, Antonio and John, again, they said, thank you so much for making this book.
I'll see you guys at the party.
Yes, we will see you very soon. Goodbye.
Well, that concludes part two of the Legends of El, Dragon of Elfwood interview with Mr. A.D. Greer himself. And don't forget to check out the book. Purchase it on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com electronically, or that physical copy. It's always good to have a physical copy. And always, always make sure to check out Facts Not Included's latest episodes on iTunes and SoundCloud and on YouTube. And for the latest movie news, check out our Facebook and Twitter pages, where you will not be let down. It is wonderful. We're doing great things here in Facts Not Included. Thanks to you guys. And also, have a great day.